Welcome to the Domestic Abuse Breakthrough Show, where we tackle violence against women and girls through education, empowerment, and hope. Join Kate, a survivor and advocate, as she shares insights, strategies, and stories that inspire healing and action. Together, we'll break the cycle and pave the way for a future of safety and strength. This show contains a trigger warning. And now, here's your host, Kate Beasley.
So welcome back to another episode. This week, it is me, myself, and I. I don't have a guest this week. So I just thought I would give you an update on what's been happening in my world, because I've been a little bit quiet for the last few weeks in terms of episodes and guests and things. And that's because there's been a lot happening in the background. First of all, I have had my own personal issues resurface, and I've had those matters to deal with. And the other thing is I've just formed a CIC, a community interest company, a non-for-profit, which is designed to do two things. To tackle the resource and support gaps for those navigating the system post-separation, further down the line, once we can get more funding approved, we will open this up to men also at a, you know, obviously in a more restricted basis. Because one thing that I do note, I acknowledge, is abuse knows no gender. There are many, many women in this space that will say, you know, that all men are the problem, and that is not true. Women can be equally as abusive. It's just that the majority of perpetrators are sadly coming from the male population. But we have to, as a society, if we were to ever tackle this growing problem, educate our younger generation. And it's not just the boys that need to be educated, it is our young girls that need to be educated for two reasons, and they both need to be educated for different on different levels. Some need educating to protect them from falling prey to dangerous, toxic, and abusive behaviour. Understand what healthy relationships look like. Not just romantic, generally as a whole. Understand the difference between healthy and unhealthy boundaries, and understand the laws and how the law is applied around abuse behaviours. And that is obviously to protect you from being impacted by these behaviours, but also from a perpetrator perspective. You know, young children who are behaving in these ways, unless we educate them, unless we use the correct language around them, and unless we implement age-appropriate consequences when these behaviours show up, we are normalising that behaviour. Only recently there was a young boy who took his own life. Now, this is one of many, many cases. He was 13 years of age and he was being targeted by a group of children in school, and he was also being targeted by these children outside of school on his way home on the bus. And nobody did anything. He was targeted for specific vulnerabilities. This little boy reached out to the police, and he was told that he was attention seeking. Well, that attention seeking led to that alleged attention seeking led to him taking his own life. And this is what I mean. We also have girls taking their own life because of other girls' behaviors. So abuse comes in many, many forms, and both genders can be guilty of behaving in these ways that put others in either physical harm or psychological harm. Risk comes in many, many forms. So I have digressed. The CIC is going to be supporting victims, those navigating their way out of abusive relationships, dealing with post-separation abuse. Our aim is to make resources more accessible, so that those that are navigating this process are less dependent on a system that is either ill-equipped or charges them a small fortune to secure safety. One thing I firmly believe is that victims know their own case. And as somebody who has navigated this process and obviously re-going through this process because the person I fleed resurfaced only recently. So I'm having to go through that cycle all over again. We know our case better than anybody. The only thing many, many people lack is the ability to be able to articulate their experiences in a way that professionals, one, understand, and two, gets their attention. And they also struggle to present in a way that doesn't result in the tables being turned on them, their trauma responses being used against them. I see so many cases where mental health is used as a stick to beat the person on the receiving end of the abuse, the person who is desperately trying to secure safety. And this is why I always say, please leave labels off the table. They will muddy the waters every single time. We have many psychology professionals who take a very black and white approach to mental health. If there's a label, well, we ignore any external factors that are influencing why the brain is responding in a particular way. And that's even from clinical psychology and clinical professionals who should know better. So why, how can we expect non-clinically and psychologically minded professionals to view things any differently? I see it so often through family court cases in particular, where the victim, the adult victim, usually the mother, is having their mental health used as a stick to beat them with, a means to position them as volatile, a risk, and unstable around the children. I've come across two cases only recently where situations exactly like that have resulted in them losing and having their children taken away from them. It is a growing problem. And this is why Things like the removal of presumption of contact. In fact, it was only recently that I had a call with one of our local MPs, secretary, who he had asked her to give me a call to get my views on the removal of presumption of contact. And my answer was simple. Unless we, it doesn't matter what policies we put into place, if unless we get strong foundations in place and we apply these policies on strong foundations, they're not going to achieve the results that you are, that everybody's hoping they will achieve. And in the case of the removal of presumption of contact, unless we close the knowledge gaps, which are evident throughout the whole safeguarding container, whether it be police, whether it be social care, whether it be t education, whether it be family court, even healthcare, the knowledge gaps are astonishing. So unless we address those gaps, we could have a situation where the removal of presumption of contact is removed from the wrong person. Because the situation has been evaluated so wrong. Trauma responses have been misread. Manipulative and underhanded tactics from the perpetrator have been viewed as reliable, believable, trustworthy, when in reality, the professionals, a lot of the time, are a pawn on the board. And this is what annoys me, is that when opinions are being formed by professionals, and they are not the right opinions that are being formed, more often than not, don't see that they are being played by the perpetrator. The educated profession, ones from professional backgrounds, the ones that are, from good standings in society, these are the ones where even an average level of knowledge often won't cut it. For these perpetrators, you need an exceptional level of understanding. You need to have multiple lenses to be able to see through their performance. And that's what it is. It's a performance. They are Oscar-winning performers. And that's why the average level of understanding doesn't cut it. It does not cut it. That's one thing that worries me in my case, because I know how good of a performer my ex is. And my ex isn't unique. He's not unique. There are many, many, many perpetrators like my ex. So we have to close the knowledge gaps. If we do not close the knowledge gaps, policies like removal of presumption of contact is dangerous, quite frankly. Because if you remove the presumption of contact from the wrong parent, the risk still remains with for the children. And the risk is still there. In fact, it's increased for the adult victim that has been misread, misevaluated, misjudged. When we evaluate risk, we're not just evaluating risk on the basis that what the perpetrator may do with their own hands. When we are evaluating risk, or when I'm evaluating risk, I'm also considering what's the risk of suicide? What's the risk of last resort thinking towards themselves? What's the risk of last resort thinking towards another person because they're being pushed to the ends of their tether? Perfect example of this is Sally Challen. Sally Challen was pushed to the point where the only she was responding from trauma logic. Her brain genuinely believed in that moment that the only way that she could possibly escape the mental and physical prison that she was subjected to for years was to take his life. When the brain realized that actually I've not escaped anything, I've just swapped one mental prison, one feeling of inescapability for another. Her mind was moving towards taking her own life. And when we look at the figures of suicide, what alarms me the most is and I've touched on this previously before, is that out of the 900 victims that take their own life as a result of them being subjected to ongoing abuse, abusive conditions, more than half of those are victims who have been pushed to the point where they have reacted outwardly to the perpetrator or committed some kind of offence as a result of being forced to live under those intolerable conditions. And they've taken their own life because they have been punished for reacting to those ongoing conditions and not feeling heard, not feeling believed, being villainized. I'm just going to break for a short interval and we'll move on with various different things when I get back.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
So, welcome back. So, as I sort of, and I have kind of gone, and this is why I do prefer to have guests, actually. So it's more of a structured, more of a structured conversation. Or it feels like it, anyway. That's my aim for the CIC is to provide resources, tools, support that is otherwise not available or not available easily and often not available unless it's at a huge cost. To those who are going through abuse, those who, because victims are not the expert in their case and nor should they be expected to be. But unfortunately, the reality is, in the absence of having professionals who are experts in which they should be, we should have experts evaluating these cases and we do not have experts evaluating these cases. You have to know how to work the system. You need to be able to use the correct language when navigating this system. And you need to be regulated enough to make sure that your trauma responses are not weaponized against you so that you can have the best possible chance of getting the best outcome for yourself. You don't need to pay thousands of pounds, tens of thousands of pounds to a lawyer, who most often than not isn't able to fight your corner well enough because they also haven't got those different lenses that are required. They are specialist in law. Law is important, of course it is. That's an area that's important. But they're not experts in evaluating risk. They're not experts in coercive control. They're not experts in understanding behaviours. They're not experts in any of those things. And that's what you need to understand for you to get your case understood well. You need to present a pattern of behavior. So that is what we will be supporting those who are going through it in the UK. It's at the moment it we are trying to get funding. Our aim is to get this fully funded. So it is at a more restricted level at the moment for the UK, but our aim is to get this fully funded so that we can operate it and run it full time, 5 days a week on the support aspect. The resources, obviously, you can get access to, whenever you like, but it is on a referral only basis as well. So, if anybody wants to know about that and how they can be referred, if you're in the UK, do reach out. And I will tell you at the end how you can reach out to me or us, shall I say, in the UK. I am also going to be launching a global one. I'm doing that obviously outside of the CIC because obviously CIC can only service UK residents. So I am going to be operating a global heal and self-advocacy hub, minus the legal support, because the legal support, legal side of things differs so much from country to country. And when even when we come to countries like Australia and the United States, different states have different laws. So whereas you can have a guide inside the UK hub, for the global one, it's very difficult to do that because there's so many different variations. So we will at some point, I will, it's my aim is at some point once we there's more people in there and we know there's enough demand for, with people in from a particular area, country or state, I will seek to get expert guests in to help with that side of things. But to start with, it will be your risk evaluation, your education and awareness tools, your case building tools, and evidence presentation tools, regulation tools. You'll have access to all of that inside of the global one. Additionally, we are going to be tackling the root cause of domestic abuse, which is in our, I mean, it's, one element is of it is our younger generation. It is. The adult side of things, it is damage limitations. It is risk. It's risk management, of a very bad situation. To try and improve outcomes for as many people as we possibly can. Where we have the most impact and where we can make the most impact is with our younger generation. And again, some in some way, some in once we get past a certain age, there's only so much influence we can have without consequences also being implemented along with the education and awareness process. Which is why our true root cause is pregnant mums and new mums. A lot, it's not by accident that we have more and more children, more and more adults being labelled and positioned as on the spectrum. It is not by accident. The adjustments that take part in our brain when we are, when we experience any trauma, these adjustments take part when the brain is developing. When a developing baby in the womb experiences scary sounds, And mum's experience, it's subjected to certain on intolerable conditions. They may not even be subjected to domestic abuse, the pregnant mum, even if they just have a not just have a history of complex PTSD, complex trauma. And their nervous system is conditioned for danger, and they experience regularly dysregulation, anxiety, themselves because of their own conditioning growing up through their life. That dysregulation will prime the baby's nervous system for danger. When we add in on top of that sound, stimulus that the baby can hear from 15 weeks and start to respond to from around about 23, 24, 25 weeks. The baby, if the baby is alarmed by certain sounds, big bangs, loud voices, those sound snapshots are stored away in the long-term memory. And the adjustments that take part when we experience any inescapable emotion occur as the brain is developing. Therapy alone will not resolve that problem. We can only manage the symptoms and the condition symptoms that what they're you're experiencing and the conditions in the brain. Controlling the data that is consumed and stored in the long-term memory and controlling the landscape. Unless we can do those two things and we teach awareness and we teach regulation, the brain will always respond to what it feels is inescapable danger. And it's emotions that are inescapable danger, not situations as such. So if we hear a word, a tone of voice, a sa another sound, something visual that reminds our brain of a situation that the brain has stored away and remembered as an inescapable experience where we were in danger, the brain will respond accordingly. So, our root cause is the womb, which is why we need to improve conditions for pregnant mums, expected mums, and we need to improve co-regulation and encourage co-regulation between mum and baby. And that needs to continue throughout childhood. Children need a few basic things in life: safety, connection, emotional safety, connection, belonging, and trust, emotional trust. And that's how we build that. Because a mum as an example, who is operating in fight flight, surviving and dodging unreasonable situations. A prime example is somebody who's navigated, who's fled domestic abuse. They are on edge constantly, dealing with the police. The sound of a siren will send their nervous system into free fall, waiting for the next thing to come out of left field, wondering when the next court papers are going to come through the door. You live in hypervigilance. Even with awareness, there's a disconnect, an emotional disconnect. You're still meeting your obligations as a parent, but there's an emotional distance that the child detects and picks up on. Even with me, and I've got awareness of it, I know when I am mentally switching, or I'm not fully present mentally, in when certain things are happening in my world with my own daughter. And I have to be conscious, I'm consciously aware of it. When I clock myself doing it, I have to bring myself back to the present. Without that awareness, we cause, without realizing it, additional trauma to our children. So that co-regulation is absolutely vital between parent and child. So that's something else that, with your work, the work that we're going to be doing is with, younger people in schools, teaching about, healthy relationships, teaching about, healthy boundaries, unhealthy boundaries, educating them about the abuse-related offences, what tactics fall into those categories, behaviours that are normalised, and actually, when it's occurring on an ongoing basis, it constitutes as a crime. Educating these young people about all of these things, but this is not just a secondary school matter. We have to educate differently with our younger gen, which are much younger generation, and this has to be done in synergy with the parents. So that's something else we're going to be working on as well. Now, I'm just going to break for another short interval before we wrap up.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
So welcome back. So that's just given you a little bit of an insight as to what we're going to be doing within the CIC to tackle this growing problem. I recently did a lecture at the social work event at Birmingham, and part of my signature lecture, which is When Risk Hides in Plain Sight, I cover how we're not just tackling a crisis around abuse. We have a mental health crisis also, it's very well known. But one feeds off each other. We can't tackle one without the other. That is the truth. They both go hand in hand. So this is why we must take a holistic approach to anything that we do when it comes to tackling root cause, improving outcomes when we're dealing with the adult group of people, or group of people who are at risk and group of people who are offenders. We must take a holistic approach. Without a holistic approach, we're not going to improve anything. We as a society and professionals, including mainly the police and CPS, they need to start to stop thinking, what's the chances of how much of a what are the chances of this case getting a conviction? Was getting a conviction over the line? Because, reputation, image, stats, figures, they all play a part. And the conviction is the icing on the cake. Our main goal should be, is the risk? If there's risk around what's happening, and the risk may not necessarily be the perpetrator. The risk may be what? That inescapability is driving and pushing that victim towards making decisions that they can't undo, like suicide. But the other thing as well is health. Health is a big factor. If somebody is subjected to long term and experiencing long term trauma, and their nervous system is constantly like a cat on a hot tin roof, that takes its toll on the body. And it will show up in health conditions. So risk comes in many, many forms. It doesn't have to be that whether you believe that the perpetrator is going to physically take the life of another person. Just their behavior alone, the psychological torture that they are subjecting that person to, can create risk in a different form. So your job should be, how do we manage risk? What are the risks and how do we manage those risks? What steps do we need to implement to prevent a life being lost one way or another? And that's why the other part of what we will be doing is educating professionals within the safeguarding container. So that's police, that's social care, that's education, that's healthcare. Anybody who works with and comes into contact, even employers, anybody who comes into contact with victims of domestic abuse and perpetrators needs to be trained. And no more so than family court. Because that's literally where risk hides in plain sight, literally. So the other thing that I want to update you on, this is going to be my last episode on UK Health Radio. After 18 wonderful months having the show on this platform, and I'm so grateful for the opportunity, I've made the decision just purely out of the fact that I am so busy at the moment, with various different things. It's going to be easier for me to have the show and move the show over to my own platform, on as a podcast. But for now, thank you for listening, and we look forward to seeing you over on the other platform. As we come to the end of today's show, I just want to take a moment to say a heartfelt thank you to every single one of you who has listened, shared, and supported over the past 18 months. Your support means more than you'll ever know. But this isn't goodbye, it's simply a new chapter. So you can continue to follow us over on the podcast. It's still the Domestic Abuse Breakthrough Show, where we'll keep having these very important conversations that matter. And if you'd like to stay connected, you can find me on Facebook or LinkedIn under Kate Beasley, or follow Say No DAS, which is DAS, across our other social platforms, which is TikTok, Instagram, and we also have a Facebook page as well. For now, though, I'm going to leave you with this, which is a reminder to carry with you every single day. Regardless of gender, never forget your worth. Take care of yourself.